Thank you, Dwayne, for that reading this morning to kind of set the tone and get us thinking about the part of the family that we want to look at today, and that being fathers. As we have gone through this series, we start a couple of weeks ago with our spiritual family and an overview of that and how that can help shape and mold lives. Last week, we went to grandparents and looked at the idea of the importance that a grandparent plays in the role of family. As we were looking through this, I thought the Sunday that's going to fall to me would be fathers, and that always puts a father a little bit on edge, I guess, but I looked at it in this aspect. I have more experience being a father than Joe has being a grandfather, and he did a great job last week, so appreciate his thoughts last week, and we want to continue today looking at the family. We're also going to be looking specifically at Ephesians chapter 6 here in just a moment, a verse from that chapter. So if you want to be opening your Bibles there, thought the reading in Psalm would be an appropriate way to open, but then we'll move on over to Ephesians chapter 6 here in just a moment. In preparing for the lesson this week, looking at some different illustrations and that type of thing, I came across a list that was entitled 50 Reasons Why It's Good to Be a Man. And I'm not going to share all 50 of them with you this morning. And I think you can see from these that probably they were written, of course, by a man. But I thought there were a few that were interesting. Number 9 on the list was you can go to the bathroom without a support group. So I don't know if that's true or not. Number 8 was if someone forgets to invite you to something, they can still be your friend. Number 7, you can drop by to see a friend without trying or without bringing a gift. Number 6, if another guy shows up at the same party in the same outfit, you might become lifelong buddies. Number 5 is one wallet, one pair of shoes, one color, all seasons. And that's probably true. Guys have a little bit easier dress code. Number 4, there's always a game on somewhere. Number 3, your pals can be trusted never to trap you with so you notice anything different. Number 2, if something mechanical doesn't work, you can bash it with a hammer and throw it across the room. And the number 1 reason why it's good to be a man is you can do your nails with a pocket knife. And, of course, most men have that knife in their pocket and are able to do that pedicure or manicure at any time. Obvious advantages to being a man. But this morning, I want to offer some encouraging news about being a father or being a dad. And hopefully that's the way this will come across. I want it to be a source of encouragement. The National Center for Fathering has recently declared what they called a fatherhood awakening. They were citing evidence that men are rediscovering what it means to be a father. And they came up with 2 rather surprising facts. Number 1 was in the past 25 years, the number of dads present at their children's births has risen from 27% to more than 90% today. And you probably see that, depending on how long ago your children were born, whether you were able to be a part of that day or not. More than 75% of men say that they would trade rapid career advancement for more time with their family. And yet, even with this good news, Time magazine, in an issue called The Hottest Jobs of the Future, this was about 12 years ago in a 2000 publication, lists fatherhood as one of the occupations that will disappear within the next century. They go on in that article and say, between in vitro fertilization and cloning, dads will become dinosaurs. And that was from the May 22nd, 2000 article in Time magazine. Joe Maxwell has a website called ibelieve.com, and he summarizes the state of fatherhood in an article entitled Dads, the New Endangered Species. And here's some of what he says. In other words, guys really want to be good dads more than ever, but they aren't changing much. When the good news is combined with the bad, it seems that fatherhood in the United States is poised either for a great awakening or a gory collapse. And I think if you think about that for just a minute, he may be pretty much right on. I think we're either headed toward a spiritual stirring or we're looking at becoming an endangered species. And that's up to each father. What are you going to do? Are you going to become that awakening in your family? Or are you going to become that endangered species? While most Americans haven't bought into the daddies or dinosaur rhetoric, I think that there is a growing ambivalence that the importance of fathers in our culture is not what it once was. We don't maybe place that importance like we need to. Joel Singleton, many of you remember him. He was one of our youth interns a few years back. It's probably been 8 years ago or so at this point. I ran into him this past September at the Harding Lectureship, and he has, since being here, done a lot of research and, in fact, has produced this, he called it a booklet. It's a little 50-page book entitled Imparting Faith Blueprint. And he has done a lot of research on families and the direction of families, the influence that families have, and even fathers on their family. And I thought it was interesting. I want to read just a paragraph that he wrote here. This is on the fifth page of his book. He says, "No one has more potential to influence a child's relationship with God than parents. There is no way for a minister, teacher, coach, or friend to impart faith like parents, because no one has the time to be there for the children as much as the parents. The average church only has 40 hours in a given year to influence a life. The average parent has 3,000 hours per year to influence that same life. Some churches work hard to get 200 to 300 hours of influence a year, but they cannot hope to have the same influence as parents." And he even goes on to give some statistics from some of the studies that he was a part of. He listed in order of the most influential people in a child's life. Number one on that list is what we're going to look at next week. Mothers. That was number one. Right behind mothers was fathers. Then the pulpit minister was number three. Grandparents, we looked at that last week, number four. The youth group, number five. Christian education within the church was number six. Friends, number seven. Church camp, number eight. Church Bible school teacher, number nine. And then the Bible itself was on 10th on the list of being the most influential in a child's life. If you'd like to look at this book, it's a good book. I've read part of it would be glad to show you that copy. Joel's put a lot of time into this. He's working with a congregation down in Florida now, but has done a lot on the idea of family ministry and looking at parenting, fathers, mothers, and the makeup of the family. Let's go over to Ephesians chapter 6. I want to spend some time with verse 4 this morning, a very well-known verse and one that you've looked at time and time again. And I want to break it down. And then at the end of our time this morning, I'm going to look at a list of things that can help fathers. And so, fathers, get your pen and paper. I'm going to put those on the PowerPoint, and we'll list those. And be ready to copy those down as we get to that point in just a moment. But our primary passage here is a short one, but it packs a big punch, especially for fathers. There in verse 4, reading this from the New International Version, says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." Before we unpack this verse, I think it's good to begin with some background information. In the first century, when this passage was written, families were presided over by fathers who could basically do whatever they pleased to do in the home. A different culture, a different time, a different way of raising a family, and the fathers were the controlling factor in that home, could basically do whatever they pleased. Rome had a law called patria potestas, which simply meant the father's power. Men who were Roman citizens were given absolute property rights over their families. In fact, when a child was born, the baby was placed between the father's feet. If the father picked up the baby, the child stayed in the home. If he turned and walked away, the child was either left to die or sold at an auction. In fact, one of the contemporaries of the Apostle Paul, a man named Seneca, he wrote some different writings, but he described Roman policy with regard to unwanted animals. And he said, "We slaughter a fierce ox. We strangle a mad dog. We plunge a knife into a sick cow. Children born weak or deformed, we drown." You know, we'd read that and think, wow, that's way out there. That's harsh. We wouldn't do anything like that. Yet, we're not much better today, are we? Millions of unwanted babies are aborted each year. We just do that at an earlier stage in life. This isn't about this morning, but I want to look that we're in a society that maybe isn't a lot different in many ways from this early society that we read of here in Ephesians chapter 6. But the Bible calls Christian fathers to a different standard. And I think that's what we need to focus on this morning. As fathers, we've got lots of different ages of fathers in our group this morning. Some young fathers. At our second service, we'll have even more young fathers in our crowd. We have different age groups this morning, and as a father, you're so important to that family, no matter where you're at in life. And the Bible sets a different standard for Christian fathers. I want you to notice the very first word of the verse is that of fathers. And I think Paul addresses just dads here because he knows that we as fathers especially need to hear this. He doesn't say parents or moms and dads. He specifically says there in verse 4, fathers. And I think we look at this, Paul is challenging us to see the word fathers as a verb and not just a noun. And he gives us basically four duties. And I want to touch on these for just a very short time this morning before we get to our list. Number one, he says, avoid exasperation. And the first duty here is a negative. It's a do not. And he says that there in verse 4. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, and then he lists some things that fathers are to do. I think this is a caution or warning designed to put us on guard against stirring up anger in our kids either deliberately or through careless provocations. Stirring up that anger. The Greek word for exasperated means to rouse to anger or to enrage. And the present tense of the verb indicates that we're to stop doing something that is common and continuous. Do not exasperate. Paul puts it another way in Colossians 3 in verse 21. He says, fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged. Do not embitter your children. Do not exasperate. You know, I think there are several ways that a father can go about doing that. Number one might be that of overprotection. You thought about that? You know, the Laban, of course, an Old Testament father that we read at or about, was an overprotective and domineering parent. And of course, we know that story. He dealt dishonestly with Jacob in order that he would marry Leah, his eldest daughter. And then, of course, Jacob was hopeful for Rachel and worked even longer then to finally be able to be united with Rachel. But ironically enough, with the protection that Laban thought he was providing his daughters, here's what they said of him in Genesis chapter 31 and verse 15. Does he not regard us as foreigners? Not only has he sold us, but he has used up what was paid for us. So that idea of overprotection. And I think as parents, we can do that. As parents, that's something that is very possible. What about overindulgence? That's kind of on the opposite side or the flip side of that. Excessively permissive parents are likely to stir their children's wrath as much as those who stifle them. We have to be able to hit that happy medium. But that overprotection or that overindulgence, if you go to extremes in either direction, that could possibly cause that exasperation. What about showing favoritism? We see a story of that. Isaac favored Esau over Jacob, and Rebekah preferred Jacob over Esau. And we know that family experienced terrible agony and division within the family. Favoritism. Unrealistic goals. I think that's another way we might exasperate a child. Dads, we can provoke our kids to wrath by constantly pushing achievement. Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 11. Paul said in that particular verse, we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father does his own children. He was talking about the church there at Thessalonica, but he was making that comparison of comforting like a father would comfort a child. What about discouragement? Colossians 3:21, we mentioned that, but it does challenge us. We're not to provoke our children to anger, or they will become discouraged. Dads, let's catch our kids doing the right things. And not always those things. And I put myself in that category because it's so easy to look and say, you need to do something different. You need to make some changes here. Yet it's so encouraging when someone comes up to you and says, you've done a good job. I see something that I want to tell you you've done well. We can do that as fathers as well. Famous book entitled Between Parent and Child. The author was Haim Ganat. And a particular paragraph in that book read, "A child learns what he lives. If he lives with criticism, he does not learn responsibility. He learns to condemn himself and to find fault with others. He learns to doubt his own judgment, to disparage his own ability, and to distrust others. And above all, he learns to live with continual expectation of impending doom." We need to be a source of encouragement to our kids. What about neglect? Another way we can exasperate a child is to neglect them. Or then excessive discipline would be another way. Too much punishment is another way, sure way, to provoke a child to anger. We can't ride our kids constantly. Give them the encouragement they need, yet the punishment that goes along with that. And I think there's a difference between punishment and discipline. We won't get into that right now, but we can see that the discipline is looking to the future. How can we do things differently the next time? What can we do differently in the future? There's a negative side to our dad duty, and that is it. Avoid that exasperation. Now let's look at some positives that he goes about here in this verse. And he says, beginning there, the next section, "Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." And I think the word "instead" shows a contrast between what we should not do and what we are to do. It sort of sets that balance there. Don't do this. Now here's what you should be focusing on. Here's what you should be concentrating on. Bringing them up. We're to bring our children up because they will not get there by themselves. We're to take an active role in shaping the character of our children. Proverbs 29 and verse 15 says, "A child left to himself brings shame to his mother." It's interesting. There's been a 50-year study conducted of Christian and non-Christian families. And most young adults who follow Christ either come from a non-Christian home or from a home where parents have shown the love that they have for Jesus. You might say, well, that's obvious, isn't it? But there's a whole other category of homes out there, and that's ones that really are what we might say lukewarm. And that type of environment produces very, very few Christians. Think about that. It's more likely for someone to become a Christian raised in a non-Christian environment than in a lukewarm environment. We're to bring them up. We're to show them the love that we have as parents. How do they see that? How do they exemplify that in their life by seeing that in their parents and their fathers? Dads, how are we doing on this one? Are we modeling authentic faith? We are to provide discipline, and he mentions that there, bringing them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. The next thing Paul challenges us to do is to provide discipline for our kids. The word translated here is admonition. In some of your Bibles, and it carries with it an idea of rebuke or warning. Literally, it means to place before the mind. Bring them up, remind them, admonish them. Proverbs 13 and verse 24, "He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly." The New Living Translation puts it this way: if you refuse to discipline your children, it proves you don't love them. If you love your children, you will be prompt to discipline them. We've all been in the presence of families where the children have lacked discipline. What a chaotic thing. What a sad thing to see a child that has taken control of a parent. We can't have that. Fathers must be the point man, the one that's willing to stand up, provide that discipline, provide that instruction. And that brings us to the fourth thing here as well. We're to avoid making our kids angry, and if all possible, we're to provide nurture and discipline. But there's one last thing that we're called to do in this verse alone, and that's to provide instruction. And notice what it says there in the last part of that verse, instruction of the Lord. The word Lord here is an extremely exalted title, as Paul uses it here in the New Testament. To say that Jesus is Lord means that He is the rightful King of the universe, ruler over the entire world. He's commander of all the armies in heaven. He's triumphant over sin and death and pain and Satan and hell. and He will one day establish His kingdom in righteousness. We're to bring up our children in that hope, the hope that we have in God, that triumph that we have. Bring them up to find their place in the triumphant cause of Christ. Bring them up to see everything in relation to the victory of God. Do whatever it takes to make them see your life is saturated with God and good things. Bring them up to know the path of sin is a dead-end street because righteousness will prevail in the end. Fathers, you're the point man in that home. You're that spiritual leader. You must take that step. You must train. Bring them up. Admonish. Steve Farrar wrote two or three well-known books. One of that was entitled Point Man. Another one entitled Standing Tall. And in that particular book, he uses a strategic metaphor for a dad. And I thought it was very helpful. He says, a godly father is the unseen spiritual submarine who lurks below the surface of every activity of his child's life. A man who has put on the full armor of God and with that armor goes to warfare on his knees for his children is a force to be reckoned with. We cannot be with our children 24 hours a day, he goes on. But through our prayers, we have the ability to affect situations even when we're not physically present. You may be undetected, but that does not mean you're ineffective. And he talks about prayer and the importance of that. We don't have to make all these changes on our own. And in the very last verse of the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 4 and verse 6, the prophet looks ahead to the ministry of John the Baptist and he writes this, saying, he will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, or else I will come and strike the land with a curse. We have some help. Are you tapping into that help this morning? Before you leave this service feeling completely piled and discouraged, because I hope this is something we can gain encouragement from. I need this lesson just like all fathers who hear this. There are a couple of conclusions that I want to point to, though. There are no perfect fathers except our Heavenly Father. We can all be better dads if we work at it. Chuck Swindoll, in his book, The Strong Family, says, come on, dads, let's start saying no to more and more of the things that pull us farther and farther away from the ones who need us the most. You're not perfect, so what else is new? You don't know exactly how to pull it off. Welcome to the club. Your family doesn't expect profound perfection, command performances, or a superhuman plan. Just you, warts and all. Let's get started. You know, I wanted to share just a few things. And I have a list of about 10 different things here. Very short. If you want to jot them down as we go through, please do. I've put a verse out to the side of each one of them. Number one, he says, start loving your wife. Let your kids see that. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 28. You're creating a pattern and a model for how your children will live their lives as parents and mates. Number two, don't expect perfect children. You may be sitting here writing these down and think, I can never do all of this. I can never get through all of this, and we can't at one time. But if there's one thing in this list that you can work on starting today, do that. Maybe it's this one thing. Don't expect perfect children. Accept your children. Acknowledge their imperfections. Love them. Enjoy your children. Psalm 127 and verse 3, we looked at that in our reading this morning. The enjoyment that families can bring. Listen to your children. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 5. They need your undivided attention. Be available. Be there for them. Provide for your children. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. Don't rob your children of the blessing of wanting, working, and waiting for material things. Don't give them too much. Yet provide for them. That's your job. That's one of the things that's expected. Train your children. Teach the children boundaries. Teach them respect. Teach them authority. I know many of you were disheartened as I was when you first heard of the news Friday, whatever that might have been. I didn't happen to be around TV or anything, even internet, and I didn't hear it until about 4 o'clock. And as I was sitting there and hearing the news in Connecticut, my first thoughts were, that could have been one of the schools right here in our community. That could be basically anywhere. And I thought about the teachers, as you hear more of the things that evolved, the principal of that school, the educators. You think about those fathers that lost a loved one on that day. But then I thought about that young man that took his own life. Where's his father? I don't know those details. But you often ask those questions. Keep those families in your prayer. Pray for yourself. That could have gone at the top of the list, and this list is in no particular order. 1 Chronicles 16 and verse 11. Seek the Lord and His strength. Seek His face continually. Pray for your children. I've heard young men say, I'm praying for my kids before they're born. What a wonderful thing. Young women, I'm praying for the children that I don't have yet, but I know I will probably be blessed with kids someday. I want to begin praying for them now. Be a positive role model. Train up a child in the way he should go. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. I think that's an interesting verse. We will look at that and think, well, that's the way it should be. And that verse doesn't say he won't take some side trips now and then. I think we need to look at that verse. And then finally, prepare your children. Proverbs 23 and verse 24. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise son will be glad in him. A list of 10 things. You may say, I can't do all 10. We can do one. We start one at a time. You may be here this morning and say, well, I'm not a father. I don't have kids still in the home. Well, help a father with this list. Help someone you know with this list. Help someone you love. You may have a child who is now raising children. You may have a nephew who is raising children. Fathers, it's a big responsibility not to be taken lightly. A man came home from work late again one day. He was tired and irritated, and he found his 5-year-old son waiting for him at the door. He said, Daddy, may I ask you a question? The tired man replied, Sure. What is it? Daddy, how much money do you make an hour? The question prompted just a little bit of anger within the dad. How dare this son, this 5-year-old, that I've been gone away from this house all day working hard to provide for him, ask a question such as that? The little boy said, I just want to know. Please tell me, how much do you make an hour? The dad, basically wanting to get rid of the son, simply said, Well, if you must know, I make about $20 an hour. The little boy sighed and bowed his head, and he looked up at his dad and said, Can I borrow $10? Well, the father, at this point, just ready to fly off the handle. The only reason you wanted to know how much money I make is so I can give you some? No, you can't have it. And promptly sent him off to bed. Well, as the father sat there that evening, he thought that I was a little bit rough on my boy. I don't know what he needed the money for. He went up to see if the boy was still asleep, knocked on the door, and the boy said, Yes, I'm up. Come on in. He went over and said, Son, I was a little hard on you. I've been thinking, and here's the $10 that you asked for. Little boy sat straight up in bed, being, Well, thank you, Dad, he exclaimed. Reaching under his pillow, he pulled out some crumpled bills and began counting. His dad, even a little bit more confused at this point, said, Well, you've got money under your pillow. What more do you want, son? He counted out 10, and the 10 that the dad had given him, handed it back to him. He said, I want an hour of your time. And that's really what it's all about, isn't it? Time in being a father. Time in being a parent. Time for one another. What are you giving this morning? Where are you this morning? As a father, as a dad, you may have looked at that list and said, I've got a long ways to go, and we all do. We can all make improvements. We can all do better. I encourage you to do that. Where are you this morning spiritually? We have a perfect Father that we can look to, a perfect Father that we can try to pattern our lives after. And He asks so very little. He says, follow me and I'll reward you greatly. Where are you in your Christian walk this morning? You may not have become a Christian. Maybe ready to put on Christ through baptism this morning. What a perfect opportunity. Or if as a Christian something's in your life that we can pray for, we want to do that this morning. If you're subject to an invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?